The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Ro McDermott, Irish Times columnist. Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer with the Irish Daily Star, are with us for the week trending. And Ro, tell us about the story that Ben had in the 5 of 5 about the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission opening an investigation into Ticketmaster.
Yeah, so first of all, I have to say, I am frankly amazed that so many people wanted to go see Oasis, but that's a different topic. But so many people wanted to go see them, and Competition Watchdog now opened an investigation to see if the ticket sales was legal, if it was all above board, because it's received more than 100 complaints from consumers who were very disappointed and frustrated about their experience of buying tickets for Oasis concerts. First of all, people were kept waiting for absolutely hours, but there was also dynamic pricing issues where people thought they were waiting on tickets that would cost them around €176, and then when they finally got through the very long waiting room online, they were told that the only available tickets were now at €400, which is more than double than people were expecting to pay. So people are
understandably, and yet people still paid it.
I wonder, do they feel paid
at that stage that you're there, I'm queuing, and it's like they're under pressure. If I don't buy, my partner, whoever told me to buy the tickets, well, you should have gone, you're after losing your place in the queue. And then people decide to pay, and afterwards suddenly go, oh Jesus, can I afford that? Will I be able to pay off my credit card next month?
Absolutely, and I think it's something to do with being online, having waited so long. Because they're saying, oh, the ticket prices are more than doubling, you feel this kind of sense of pressure and you're put on the spot to make that decision. And often there's a time limit that they say you have 15 minutes to make this purchase or you're out of the queue as well.
Kieran, also, you love your music and you're of the right age.
That's why I hate Oasis. I'm a very proud music snob, but don't mind admitting to that. And I didn't like them at the time, and I definitely would have no interest in listening to them now. I know they're hugely popular, but like with a lot of what they call them now, heritage acts reforming, I think it's people are nostalgic for their youth rather than the music. I think they remember going to them in Slane or Parque Kiev or wherever, you know. My brother and my sister went to a bit different venues we were talking about last week, but I think there's an element, Ro was saying there about, you know, why do people, you know, the two of you saying, why do people pay that kind of money? But I think the system is playing you. Is when you've waited for hours and you've grown in and you say you can buy, you feel you've won. So you feel you've won, even though you're actually being screwed. You feel you've won now. You're in, and I'll pay whatever it takes, because it's been built up. You've been seeing, you know, you're 5,000 in the queue, and you're 100 in the queue, and you're 10 in the queue.
You've won the lotto.
Yeah, when you're having to pay a big price. Like it's con capitalism. Like it's the ultimate. But
there's also listeners pointing out that why is there such attention being paid to it now, given that apparently with Coldplay and Taylor Swift, something similar applied. Or was that only with the resale tickets that happened rather than with the initial sale of tickets?
I think tickets were very expensive for Coldplay. I have a cousin who was trying to get tickets for her son, and she had me on the line for hours. She was on her line for hours, and she ended up paying absolutely through the nose. I think people are noticing, first of all, how ridiculously expensive a lot of these gigs are, because people are paying up to 400, up to 600 quid for tickets, which is absolutely insane. People are noticing that more because bigger acts are coming over. But I think there's also the cost of living crisis, and people are saying, we don't have this money anymore.
But Dylan in Limerick says, when they put on Coldplay tickets, I was being charged nearly €1,000 for a ticket. Yeah. Absolute madness, yet nothing said. I complained to Ticketmaster, the financial regulator, and the ombudsman, and was ignored. The greed has gone beyond comprehension, and it's the last one in that gets stung. I would never go near Ticketmaster again. Although a friend of mine was saying today as well, actually, he remembers for the Ireland-England game in 1990, one that Tony Cascarino scored in, and Tony be with us after six o'clock, that he queued out in the open air in a sleeping bag to get tickets for that, because it was after the World Cup in 1990. Yeah. It was a big home game against England, a repeat of the battle out in Italy in the World Cup. And he said the queue went all the way up Grafton Street, people sleeping out. So, you know, maybe things are a bit better. At least you only have to queue online now.
Yeah, but would you, like, go back to the Taylor Swift thing. Like, remember all the, you know, this farcical pre-sales queue, you know, that you'd join a queue. You know, you'd pre-register, and you weren't actually trying to buy a ticket then, but you'd pre-register to go in. Like, they're just making it harder and harder. Like, the Galler, the Oasis one, like, there's a good rule of thumb, you know, never paid for somebody else's alimony. And that's all this is about. So, like, I don't understand. Like, I'm going to a Lazarus Soul in Vicar Street in a few weeks, and the tickets were just over €30, and they're an incredible band. And there's so many brilliant musicians and brilliant bands out there. And I've never been a fan of music and fields. I don't get it. When you watch the you look at clips of people there, they're taking video clips on their phone of an artist or a band on a big screen. So it's kind of third-hand experience. It's very, very odd. I don't get it. Give me rock and roll should be indoors, always.
But I will say, I think the reason that people, I mean, look, there are big acts and there have always been big acts and people have always queued outside. They knew how much they were paying, I will point out, when you were sleeping outside in a sleeping bag. But I will say, I also think we have completely decimated so many of our cultural centres and so many of our affordable cultural centres, particularly in Dublin, but all around the country. And I think people are just so enthusiastic about the idea of gathering together that they will pay through the nose. And I think we need to pay attention to that and bring back so many of the clubs and gig venues that have been shut down, particularly during COVID, but even because of buying up places and then turning them into hotels. We have decimated so much of our culture that we really need to reclaim it and give people affordable opportunities to go.
There's loads of comments coming into the last word, 0874100102, so I'm going to read some of them. There was no dynamic pricing for Taylor Swift. There were VIP packages, but they weren't just normal tickets, and the pre-sale for Taylor Swift was not farcical. Real fans who pre-ordered the album got codes before the Ticketmaster pre-sale.
Real fans?
But what's real fans?
Real fans who've already paid. So she's saying, if you pay me before, then you'll be able to pay me quicker next time.
I love Taylor Swift. It's one of the only musicians I would go to see in a field. But I think that the way that was handled was unacceptable.
Okay, Oasis tickets are a luxury good. If you can't afford it, it's irresponsible to pay large sums of money for it. It's not essential to get concert tickets. Another one says, do what U2 did in the Three Arena. You must bring the purchase and credit card to the door to get in. It stops resale and keeps prices down.
That's very good.
Okay. There's absolutely loads coming in about this, but we better move on to other things. Hey, can you explain actually to me, Ro, what's going on in this Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift contract?
Travis Kelce.
As you're a relationships expert.
Taylor Swift's boyfriend, who also holds a football, I believe. So obviously their relationship has been very publicised. She's been both accused and championed for bringing attention to the NFL, accused of hijacking it. She's been accused of being a shill for Biden through this relationship. But it's a lot of attention on this relationship. There was rumours that they had engaged a lawyer to talk about a prenup, so people were very excited. And then a document appeared online. And it was presented as a document from his PR agency, his management, that was prepping for a Taylor Swift breakup. And it had an entire PR strategy of what kind of language they would use in the public statement, what kind of interviews he would do afterwards, that they had to get him training so that he could answer questions respectfully. The language would be something like, no, we're parting ways, very respectful, just scheduling issues, very, you know, excited for what the other does in the future, wishing each other well. And people leapt all over this. This document was fake. Just somebody threw it online. It might have been a PR project for someone's college assignment. It kind of just be an absolute fake. Travis Kelce has come out, his PR agency have come out and said this is absolute nonsense. But I think the reason people are really intrigued by this is that I think we are increasingly aware of the role that PR and management plays in celebrities' reputations and their personal lives, and also how those PR machines really do have an impact. So if you look at things like the Amber Heard trial, where there was coordinated attempts to skew the narrative against Amber Heard, there has been investigations into Meghan Markle and the press coverage and the social media coverage of Meghan Markle that showed that 83 Twitter accounts were responsible for 114,000 anti-Meghan Markle tweets that reached 17 million other Twitter users, and they were coordinated efforts. And we know that public opinion of Meghan Markle really was decimated. You can see it now in Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. They're going through an incredibly messy divorce. They were both at a film festival on the weekend, and there was coordinations to make sure they didn't run into each other. So I think people are really wising up to how much PR strategy plays in the lives of celebrities, how it affects our opinion of them, and we're interested. So people jumped all over this.
Remind me, what's Travis Kelce's position in American football?
I've no idea.
Do you not follow American football?
No interest. Absolutely no one.
Taylor Swift's backup
dancer. You can put that with Oasis and American football. But
so you have no interest in the story whatsoever.
I'm very interested in Taylor Swift. I think the only clause they should have on a breakup agreement is that she's going to write 50 songs about him. So he has to be ready for that once they break up, because they're going on her track record. That's part of it. No, to follow American football, Matt, you have to give up your Sunday nights, and I'm doing enough sport all week without giving up a Sunday night as well.
I think on the thing of Taylor Swift writing in songs, I think why people are also interested in PR and celebrity relationships is we're also increasingly aware of how NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, are often used in celebrity relationships. So if you have sex with a celebrity, if you have a one-night stand with a celebrity, if you're invited back to their hotel room, or if you get into a relationship, often you are made to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and that is becoming more publicised. But also there are huge ethical concerns around the use of non-disclosure agreements in business, in criminal investigations, for example, in abuse or misconduct allegations. So I think people, again, there's an angle to this that we're trying to understand how PR, non-disclosure agreements, celebrity culture influences our perception of people, what we're made aware of, and the machine that is operating behind things.
The story which has dominated political discourse for the week, Kieran, has been the bike shelter in Leinster House for €336,000, more than the price of a house, to home 4.5 bikes a day, apparently.
Yeah, it's you just would like, there's a, you know, this famous book by the former Irish Times, the late Irish Times journalist John Healy, No One Shouted Stop. And you just wonder, during this process, how nobody, you know, shone a red light and said, you know, what the hell is going on here? How is this?
How should I start it so I'll finish?
Yeah. But it's funny because you remember this back in the early 90s that Charlie Haughey, in line with his delusions or illusions of grandeur, you know, he decided to do up government buildings.
17 million quid it cost at the time.
Is that what it was at the time? Yeah, because remember it was called Chas Mahal. That was a nickname for it. But in hindsight, you can say maybe that
it's
was...
good investment.
It's a magnificent bit. No, it looks great now. But like something like this, I don't think with hindsight in 30 years we're going to be saying that was a great bank. It was worth 300 grand. And I think initially this came out through Ken Fox, a journalist.
Yes.
Who I worked with Ken years ago.
And he's terrific at finding stuff under freedom of information.
He's very, very tenacious. And I saw he was tweeting today that he's had follow, there's more to come, and he's hoping to get the information. So maybe that's a breakdown of what exactly.
No, the
322,000 that was spent on the main construction, how that has broken down. Maybe that we'll find that out soon.
I wonder will they have bike sheds up at the new National Children's Hospital as well?
Well, hopefully, if they have room for bikes, they'll have more for room. Because I want to point out that the bike, people are calling it a bike shed, by the way. It's a bike canopy. It doesn't even have walls. It only holds 18 bikes, which is €18,000 per bike, which is incredible.
And apparently it's hardly ever used. That's why I said 4.5 bikes a day.
People aren't using it because it's exposed to the elements. People are like, my bike's going to get rusty because it's literally a canopy. But I think it just feeds into, there have been so many ridiculous examples of, like, 2007. There was the John McGuinness bathroom that was $250,000. And then only the finest toilet paper could be used in it. There was the replacement of the velvet carpets, which was again €265,000, which was ridiculous. And then we had the infamous printer, which cost €800,000. And then they had to take the roof off building, so it ended up costing €1.4 million.
That we actually had during the week as well. Everyone forgets about the tuck shop, which was at the front building, which cost €1.3 million to build, and is now used for storing the Virgin Media and RT cameras by the political journalists. They leave the cameras and stuff there and they do their makeup in this room before they go and do interviews on the plinth. €1.3 million.
But I do think people are just at the point where we're so glad that people like Ken Fox are exposing this, because there's so little transparency. And also people just feel at this stage that they're being conned, because when you're constantly hearing that there isn't enough money to put into things like housing and then these things. And I understand that 335 grand is not going to solve the world's problems. But when people just feel like there's this constant overspending and then people are struggling on a daily basis, it just dilutes any trust in the government.
Actually, somebody has just sent me in from the Leitrim Observer. I'm presuming this is real and legit. A Leitrim bus stop part of €740,000 town development project. And this list, that can't just be for the bus stop. It must be more. But apparently it's useless against the weather because of the inverted roof and height. There's not a rubbish bin and there isn't even bus schedules advertised at the shelter.
Yeah.
The shelter also comes in a week where I think there was something like 38 buses just didn't appear for consumers this week as well. So I just think...
When you get ghosted by buses, when you're standing at the... I think you're looking at the thing and suddenly the bus you're waiting for disappears like it never existed. Yeah.
Like, if I wanted to be ghosted by men, I'd go back on Tinder. You know?
But what really... I think what really winds people up is so many people are told, you know, in pretty dire straits that there isn't funds there for various things. Like, it might be special needs assistance or respite care. And I was working out, like, that's the cost of the bike shelter is equivalent to 11,000 hours of respite care, which a lot of which would go a long way for a lot of families, or is equivalent to 10 special needs assistance salaries for a year in schools. So it's just such an appalling waste of money, and you just wonder who the hell is signing up this stuff.
A listener says, what about the 11,500-ton diesel generator has been stored at a substantial cost in Dublin Port? No, nothing about that. Something else we had a bit of fun with during the week, Kieran, was this SPHE textbook, which you sort of said to me off air, is that what they call civics these days? It's just showing our age, Kieran. But the depiction of the Irish family, which, as I said on Tuesday night, came straight out of The Simpsons.
It did come straight out. I actually asked my son, because he would do SPHE, and I don't know much about it, like, what did he think of it all? And he says, like, he's seen, well, not this, like, I think this was probably not the brightest idea, but he says these things are just to engender debate. No, they bring them up at the school and are topic of different kind of families.
But just for people who weren't with us the other night, explain the picture of this traditional Irish family.
Traditional family, like it's you know, it's kind of like from Punch in the 19th century. They're all wearing iron sweaters. They only eat potatoes, bacon, and cabbage.
They're doing Irish dancing.
Yeah, they do Irish dancing. They never go abroad. They won't play foreign sports. And they don't mix with other religions because this would be a bad influence. And they're compared to a second family, which is multicultural, travels a lot.
Eats pizzas and curries.
Yeah, but you have this. Like, I'm a bit uncomfortable with it because effectively, you know, this was highlighted and the people who went after are the people who were always on about cancel culture. And effectively, they've got this book cancelled. Like, the publishers have backed down and got panicky over it. And... you know, if you look back at the history of the state, for half of the history of the state, the successive governments were obsessed with banning books. And I don't like going back to that. I think it was probably clumsy the way this book was put together, you know, the examples used. But it's not... I don't think they're trying to con kids into this. You know, this is... you have to... one family is good and one is bad. It's just to get a discussion going in class and go over various issues. I don't think it's a huge deal.
I think it's been so blown out of proportion. I think people complaining about it are the same people who call me a snowflake if I said I'd like a trigger warning about sexual assault in every single film that's out at the moment. This idea that this is, it's indoctrinating children to hate their own culture. It was an exaggerated caricature, and the point of which was to show that every culture, if you block out other cultures, if you don't mix, if you don't praise things, it's going to limit you, and it's a limitation. And of course, that is an easier exercise to engage in when you talk about your own culture rather than criticizing other cultures. And I think it was done clumsily, but of course the hope is that you have a teacher presiding over that conversation in kids and going, yes, GAA is wonderful, and of course, like, embracing Irish culture is great, but wouldn't that be limiting if we didn't watch anything from anywhere with price? So people, I think the concern here is that, sure, the cartoon is taken out. I believe that they're going to do an edited version of the book, so the issue has been addressed, but I think there's a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment being spread around saying this is indoctrinating children, and people are using this as an excuse to be racist. It's a cartoon. It was badly done. It's been edited. Can we all calm down?
Just to finish, I'm going to read a text that's been sent in. It's a little bit long, but stick with me. Three contractors from Dublin, Kildare and Cork tender for the bike shed at Leinster House, interviewed by an OPW officer. The Dublin man quoted €100,000 for the job, and the breakdown was €33,000 for parts, €33,000 for labour, and a €34,000 profit. The Kildare man quoted €150,000, breakdown €50,000 parts, €50,000 labour, €50,000 profit. The Cork man quoted €300,000, and the OPW officer was shocked and asked for the breakdown, to which the Cork man said, €100,000 for me, €100,000 for you, and we'll give the job to the Dublin man. Okay, Kieran Cunningham and Rowan McDermott, thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.